Hey, Think Real Nation. Thanks so much for joining the podcast today. We've got a great guest coming up. I'm Eddie Wilson, the host of the podcast. But first, I want to say thank you to our podcast sponsor, which is Real Property Management. Working with the right property management company can put more money in your pocket, not less. Real Property Management provides a higher standard of property management to make sure you're maximizing the return on your investments. Experience the real difference with Real Property Management. Visit realpropertymgt.com, realpropertymgt.com. Our guest today is a guest that's been with us multiple times. He's one of the leaders in the industry, especially in the lending industry, and his name is Ben Furtick. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me back. Always a pleasure.
Yeah, very good. So, I want to kind of jump into some things that have been going on specifically and more recently in the lending industry. There's been a lot of legislation being passed, or at least being put in front of lenders and borrowers, specific to regulation around what liability banks are allowed to take, right? Like, I know that they're essentially revisiting a lot of the Dodd-Frank kind of construct. When we look at private lending, is all these gaps in kind of the conventional lending space what really clears the way for private lending? Is that what's making the private lending industry continue to just grow and grow and grow, and more capital keeps coming into that space?
I think one of the redeeming qualities, and I've been in this space since 2012, is that it was a much more relaxed regulatory environment, and that had a lot of impact, especially if you look at the organic overall growth of the industry. But the other thing it allowed us to do is really was to manage our costs, and that cost got passed along to the underlying borrower base ultimately, and it allowed for a lot of scale. If you go and look at the cost to originate, let's say, a conventional loan, which are all subject to Dodd-Frank, or any type of consumer transaction which would be subject to TRID or a Dodd-Frank, cost to originate that loan is about $12,000 per the Mortgage Bankers Association. And average loan size about $400,000, so 300 basis points. You can do that for demonstrably less in the private lending space. And I think as we talk to stakeholders in that context, lobbyists with the Mortgage Bankers Association, I think that the sentiment is that there's probably not a lot of votes to be gained at the federal level from regulating loans to LLCs. Mm-hmm. Understanding that, yes, these loans a lot of times are guaranteed by a natural person. But I think that there are some assumptions that the states, as this industry grows to a certain level, are going to figure out that lenders in the private money space or the private lending space are going to be a good source of revenue, right? So you can go in, you can audit them the same way you would a licensed originator in the state that originates to consumers. And you could probably come up with a methodology of turning that into a revenue source. And I think, like most of the institutional based, I think we're expecting that to some extent.
Yeah, and I know in some states they have already been trying to pass regulation. I know we fought it in the state of Florida three or four times.
California.
Florida. Yeah, New York.
Yep.
And so it's obvious that it's already on their radar, and it seems like their intention, the intentionality, is a revenue source, not necessarily
at the state level. I think so,
and not necessarily keeping the borrower safe, right? It's not like it's falling into some sort of a consumer kind of concern. It's more about, like, is this a revenue stream, and should we be leveling the playing field with the conventional lending space?
Look, if you look through a common sense or a rational lens, it's hard to see it not being destructive.
Right.
Relative to the interest of the borrower. It's not even that it's not beneficial.
Sure.
Some of the stuff that we've seen in, not so much in Florida, which was really a more of a licensing issue that you guys did a great job with. New York and California, I mean, it's hard to see the rationale behind the intent of some of that legislation.
Right. Yeah.
But, I think that we expect that some of that stuff is going to be integrated, into our compliance and regulatory programs over time, right?
Sure.
If you just look at the political landscape of those jurisdictions, mm-hmm. something's going to pass.
Right. Let's talk about the actual industry, the real estate investment industry, which you serve. And, you know, if you don't know Ben, he's with Constructive Loans. And a lot of what you're serving is the lenders, the originators that are taking the capital that you provide, and you're getting it out to Main Street to these people that are flipping houses, that are buying, holding houses, whatever the kind of end result is. It is that source of private capital. Let's talk about the industry, though, the real estate investment industry, not just lending as a whole, but the REI space. You know, right now we have a massive issue with housing shortage, right? Like there's just not enough inventory. Yeah,
To 5 million, depending on who, 3 to 6 million, depending on who you listen to, sure.
Right, which, you know, they're saying is somewhere between like 2.5 months worth of inventory on the MLS or whatever it is. And so with that being said, how important is it for a person who's out there as an investor to have their sources of capital lined up and lined up early, because it's so much more competitive at the actual buying space?
No, look, you and I have talked about this a lot in the past. I mean, we advocate for the mortgage broker specifically for that reason. And I think if you look at the capital landscape, you know, from a lending perspective to serve that constituency, it's a lot better than it has been in 2022 or 2023, just after the first of the year. And there's a number of different reasons for that. But I mean, I think spread related assets in general are doing a lot better. So what you're going to see is a lot more products come online. And you're going to need those products because, look, I mean, acquisition is tough, right? I mean, there is a shortage, not only from a housing perspective, but from a supply perspective, right? So, you know, we think that the residential real estate investor should be spending their time there, or what you and I have talked about earlier, the property management side gets back to that whole regulatory problem also, where, you know, you've got to spend a lot of time administering that. And I just think that the landscape is getting so broad and the application for capital is so targeted because it's so difficult from a supply perspective, that's really where the residential real estate investor should focus. But I think that if you have a broker, you know, you will almost inherently be lined up.
Yeah.
And I think what's happened, and you've seen it in the DSCR space, you know, which was traditionally funded by the bond market, and then insurance companies came in beginning of 22 and 23. And now it's kind of really toggled back towards the bond, you know, the bondholders being more aggressive, and the insurance companies like, wait a minute, we like these loans. Like, so now you've got, you know, so, and then on the fix and flip side, right, we talked about, like, now there's been a rated securitization done, which brings in a lot of other capital that we didn't have before. And, you know, where some of the lower risk constituencies like pension funds and so forth can come in, you know, but with that, that capital's formative. So counterintuitively, it even adds benefit to the more flexible, the risk takers, some of these smaller lenders who can do things along those lines, because there's like more of a distinction.
Right.
But I think you gotta have, I mean, I think having a broker in place just allows you to focus your attention as a real estate investor just on some of the other challenges that are out there that ain't going away.
We always go so deep into real estate, but I know a lot of our listeners, yes, they're real estate investors, but they're also business owners. A lot of small business owners that are using their excess capital to get into the space.
Yep.
Can I ask you a business question?
Sure.
Totally unrelated to real estate.
Sure.
Okay. I believe, and I've been teaching for years, that every great windfall in business comes after the point of sacrifice, right? And you've built one of the biggest lending companies in our space. And I would like to know a little bit more about that journey of how you've built it, and what sacrifice did you have to make in order to get to the peak of where you are? More inspiration for them, because we could talk about real estate all day long, how to find deals, acquisition, where to stack capital, and they could just go back and look at all of our other podcasts we've done.
Yeah.
But the reality of it is like, what I really want to help a lot of our listeners are is like with their actual personal journey of building their business and building their empire, what sacrifices have you made? What have you given up in order for you to create Constructive?
Yeah, so I would tell you that we started Constructive with two people in a basement office that, you know, one of our, you know, of our ownership interests had. And, you know, my belief systems when it comes to mortgage banking, I've been in a mortgage banking 26 years, and there's other belief systems out there, is that the best execution comes from the best long-term growth comes from a demand pull. So I start to focus, and I've done three startups, in mortgage banking. I start everything from a demand pull, which means I try to get profitable as fast as I can. And ultimately what happens there, right, because you're just not adding a bunch of costs and then trying to backfill it with production. Number one, I think your risk profile remains, a lot more resilient for the long term. But you give up early volume. You give up early growth. You give up the ability to maybe develop technology early on. You give up, and you just have to execute through that. And I just think that, and we've seen terms like fintech thrown around in our space, right, where, you know, you just go and you invest a ton of money in a technology, you grow big before you actually grow, and then you try to backfill it, and you end up taking, you know.
More the VC model, where you're just throwing capital.
The VC model, yeah. And, you know, maybe one in 10, you know, investments work.
Sure.
So it kind of went the inverse of that. Mm-hmm. But I think that it takes a lot more discipline, right? And you're doing this sometimes, without the excitement that you would have had you basically taken, another direction.
Right.
And look, and you and I knew each other back at that
right.
point where,
right.
you know, Constructive, you know, we started and, you know, you got to do 10 million before you can do 100 million. And
right.
then you got to do 100 million before
right.
you can do a billion. And you got to do
right.
a billion before you can do several billion.
Right.
And I think, you know, if I like that approach, mm-hmm. if I look at the market conditions today, right, and we're not going to be in this kind of free to cheap
right.
money
right.
to seed a business, I think you have to go that way.
Yeah.
And it does take discipline. I think, you know, you've got to really focus on execution. You've got to focus on economics. You know, and you still have to be inspired by something.
Right.
But I just don't think that you can just take the same risks mm-hmm. That number one, you know, you may take in other business lines, but you certainly can't take the same risk as if you're, in effect, your cost of capital is zero also, which it has been for,
yeah.
you know.
What I'm hearing you say, which I think is so powerful, is that it is that delayed gratification. Instead of taking every bit of not just profit, but top line revenue you have coming back into your business and infusing it into growth or innovation or new ideas, it's really like this slow.
And you can't
yeah.
infuse it into it if you don't have it.
Right.
Right? Because
right.
you're not, you know, you're
but
not.
I think
just
that a lot of lenders, they don't have it. But what they do is they're pulling it from their future profits by using their cash flow to leverage. And then they're putting it into innovation, and all they're doing is causing this massive wave that's going to fight against them later on.
So you're going to have to backfill,
right?
Right, and ultimately,
which in the end, your customers, they're the ones that ultimately, because you're going to have to pass that cost on at some point, right? Like if you're going to survive.
We know that's going on in the industry right now.
Right.
We know that's gone on in the industry
It's currently going on right now.
It is currently going on right now.
And we've also seen the wave actually catch people, right? Like, so there are some that are passing on to the consumer, and there are some that have been swallowed by the wave.
I've never seen a mortgage banker succeed over even the intermediate, but certainly not the long term, by trying to grow through taking more risk.
Yeah.
And I think that if you...
Say that one more time, because I think that's one of the most profound things that people should hear.
I have never seen a mortgage banker. Now, right. look, there's other differences, businesses that have different risk
right.
profiles, and certainly I can appreciate that. But from a mortgage banking perspective, I've never seen long-term success come from a growth strategy that's focused around taking more risk.
Yeah.
It just doesn't work.
And I think that every person that's out there that's looking at this model should take that warning, right? Because I 100% agree with you and feel like that is such a great perspective for them to grow their business at. I know we're actually already out of time. We go super fast on these, but I appreciate jumping into the personal side and watching you grow from the 10 million to the billion has been incredible. And watching you guys do it in a very stable way that's serving our customer, the real estate investor, has been incredible. So real quick, how can they get in touch with you, or how do they find out more about Constructive?
Yeah, look, I mean, everything that we generally do is through a broker, but I mean, you could just constructivecapital.com, you know, any question, inquiry, you know, we'll either address it or we'll set you up with one of our quality clients, and, you know, you'll get a, to the extent that you're looking for a loan, you will get it cheaper than if you go to somebody direct.
Cool. Thanks so much. Appreciate it. Yeah. If you have not already considered, as you're building out your real estate empire, I know many of you are, you reach out to me all the time, you are already originating loans. You're buying rental properties, but you've also gotten into the private lending space. Someone like Ben at Constructive would be a great resource to help you build that stack out, right? Like, there's a lot of ways to make money in real estate, and you guys are all exploring where it is because things are getting tighter. Your rental properties are not yielding the same percentage. Your flips are not yielding the same. And you're looking at all these other vehicles inside of the space, and a lot of you have gotten into origination, and you really could use a partner like Constructive if you're getting to a place of volume, right? And so I'd very much encourage you to watch them, to follow them, to get a hold of Ben and team to see what Constructive can do for you. One more great quick thank you to our podcast sponsor, which is Real Property Management. Real Property Management is a great property management company. They're nationwide, and a good property manager will always help you put more money in your pocket than take it out. Yes, they have a percentage or a fee that they charge, but in the end, if they do a great job, they will help you maintain your top line revenue over the course of the year. You can find out more about Real Property Management by going to realpropertymgt.com. That's realpropertymgt.com, and find out what the Real Property Management difference is. Also, if you have not subscribed to our magazine, I want you to go to the Think Realty website and make sure you subscribe to the magazine. Make sure that this is coming to your door every single month. It's great content that you can either pick up on the shelves of Barnes & Noble or newsstands all around, but also I'd love to see it, get it at the doorstep so you can pick us up every single month. Hear great content from great providers just like Ben and others. Thanks so much for watching. Thanks for being a part of the podcast. Make sure you subscribe, you share, and always stay involved with us.